Our next guest is going to do a true public service. And I love anything that makes learning more interesting for kids. We're going to do it in one of the most necessary areas of all, science. You love science when you were a kid, right? Science is awesome. Science is miracles. Science is, you know, better than any pyrotechnics, you know, contrived show on stage. How about when science puts on the light show? Yeah, so science is what we're talking about. With our next guest, Dr. Scott Bembenek. He's got a PhD in theoretical chemical physics, works as a computational chemist at Johnson & Johnson. A computational chemist. Are you ready to love this? I am. The new book is called The Cosmic Machine, and it takes readers from the earliest scientific inquiries in human history on a journey in search of the answers to the key questions that we still talk about all the time, right? Energy, atoms, quantum mechanics. Oh, my God, did that come up yesterday on the show? Remember the guy with the quantum mechanics? Right. Our guest has made substantial contributions to the areas of statistical mechanics. Get ready, baby. Kinetic theory, glass theory, liquid dynamics, and computational drug discovery. The book is called The Cosmic Machine, The Science That Runs Our Universe, and the Story Behind It. You want to follow along with us? You can go to www.scottbembenek, which is B-E-M-B-E-N-E-K. So go to scottbembenek.com. StarCom Radio Network, Ed Till Show, AM/FM stations all across America. We welcome our guest, Dr. Scott Bembenek, to the Ed Till Show. How are you today?
I'm doing good, Ed. How are you?
I'm fired up, man. This is science. Science to me is still a riveting pyrotechnics. It's still fascinating. It's still got mystery. But, you know, I'll tell you the truth how I'm doing here. I feel like tech has taken some of the fun, some of the drama out of science. Tech is flat. You know, zeros, ones, digital. CDs for music, right. MP, flat. It's all flat and dry. Science is not dry. Science is the aurora borealis. Science is the eclipse that's about to happen. Chemical reactions, test tubes, boiling, you know, all that stuff. Excitement. So that's what how I feel. I'm so glad we're talking about science and how to make it interesting for students.
Yeah, and I'm glad that you feel that way. You got me even more fired up.
So where do we begin? You know, you do the most technical and awesome stuff. What do you got for beginners to entice people into the magic of science?
Well, you know, I think it's, I mean, that's a great question. I think it comes down to, first, what is the problem? You know, why isn't it, you know, like you said, it's very exciting stuff. I think it is, but why isn't it coming through that way? And I think the problem is that we're just not conveying it that way. We're not telling science as an interesting story. We're not getting people excited about it. I mean, let's face it, those classes that everybody takes in school, they take them because they're oftentimes required and they just want to finish it up, and they sit through these very dry lectures where facts are just kind of pummeled at them, right?
Right.
I think we need to change that. You know, we need to shape this into a real story. Science is exciting. You know, like you were talking about earlier, it's very exciting. The unfortunate part is that the people doing it, the scientists, they're very focused on their work. They're not thinking so much about communicating it to a general audience. And when they actually do talk about it, it's the cut and dry facts. you know, which actually, funny enough, it's a great way to really get the information out to their colleagues, but it's not a great way to really engage and excite people about science. And I think we need to change that. We need to shape it into an overall story.
Right. Well, that there you go. That's the word I was going to ask you about. There needs to be a storytelling narrative in science, the same way there is about the cowboys and how the West was won and ancient Greece or whatever story we're telling. The narrative.
Right, but we never learn it that way.
And what do you think that's about?
I'm sorry, go ahead, Ed.
No, I want you
to... No,
please. Please, no, develop that point. Why has it gotten to where it's been when... I saw a fascinating story last evening on public broadcasting. They're running about the history of the atom bomb. I think it's just called The Bomb. And there was the whole idea was, who are they going to select to be the charismatic scientist? Who's going to be the explainer? Who's going to be the guy you bring in the room? We haven't invented it yet. We don't know how we're going to invent it, but this is what it's going to do. This is how it's going to work. And that turned out to be Oppenheimer, based on a military dude picking him, saying, this guy is an incredible explainer. He was a great storyteller. So let's use that as a starting point. That's what we need. Science needs a storyteller, correct?
Yes, that's what I think. I think we need a storyteller. We need someone that not only tells you the facts, but not only knows these exciting things and can really talk in detail about it. You know, it needs to be shaped into a real story. It needs to be humanized. You know, this is work done by very passionate people. You know, this is exciting. Not only is it exciting work, but the people are passionate. They're trying to discover and unlock the mysteries of the universe, things that are going to impact all of us. You know, so let's talk about these people. Let's kind of humanize it. Let's talk about the struggles that they go through to make these discoveries. Let's put it into a historical context. You know, a lot of this is, you know, from things long ago. I think that a lot of it seems disconnected. We think, wow, that was something that Einstein or Galileo or Newton did long ago. It's not important anymore. Well, but that's not true at all. It's just that science is actually very timeless, but we don't talk about it in this way. We don't put it into a human perspective. We don't shape it into a story.
You know, I think so often here's something that's missed about science. But again, the people who are passionate about it already know this, but I think it needs to be just said out loud. One of the ways that you sell a movie or you sell a book or anything is to say, this is a true story. This really happened. And that's what you can say at the beginning of every science class. This is true. It's not just about light years away and quantum mechanics and photons and these things. This is true. And I think right away you're off on a different level because you're going to be mystified, but you're going to have this faith. You're going to know this founding building block. This is actually happening. Talk to me a little bit about, in your book, you address the early scientific inquiries. And, of course, you know, you marvel at people like Da Vinci and others who have been selected out of history and say, wow, look at what they were doing with what they had. What compels us most about the earliest reports that you were able to look at? When you go to the earliest parts of human history, what jumped out at you? What were you struck by?
Oh, I mean, that's a great question. So I think about, so I start off in the book with energy, and I talk a lot about Galileo. Of course, we all know Galileo. But I think, you know, what's amazing to me is we look at today when we're doing science and the amazing equipment and technology we have to do some of the things we do. And then you go back to Galileo's time, and here's a guy that's using his pulse to measure time. He didn't have an accurate enough clock to actually do the measurements he needs. So he was doing all these things like using a water clock and counting drips and weighing the amount of water dripped into a pan. Or he's using his pulse, you know. I mean, so I'm fascinated by the discoveries that these guys made, people like Galileo, with such a severe lack of technology.
Now, let me ask, this is, I think, another great entry point for people. One of the great things about storytelling are the characters, the heroes. Galileo is a great one to use because it's recognizable. The kids go, I've heard about Galileo, but they may not know what a badass he was. In order to be one of these folks back in the day when he was, Da Vinci, et cetera, Galileo, you had to really be somebody. Because it wasn't going to be, oh, thank you for all the new stuff you're telling us. You could wind up on the rack somewhere and never heard from again. You could be an apostate. You could be a heretic. You could get swept away. So you had to be of a magnificent character in some way to go there, to find out what you found out, and then to know it and try to tell the rest of society, as staid and structured as it was, that you have new stuff. That this may change, right? Go ahead. Talk about that a little bit.
No, I mean, you're making a great point. You got me really thinking. I mean, yeah, well, here's a guy, Galileo, I mean, that he really stood up for what he believed in, right? I mean, I think we all kind of have a sense of the story. You know, he fought against and got pushed back from the church, and he was told, hey, you know, don't talk about this stuff. Keep it down. I can't have you saying that the sun is the center of the universe. That messes up everything that we know, you know, according to church doctrine. And Galileo kind of said, oh, okay, I'll dial it down. Of course, we know he didn't. And then he got in trouble, and he spent the, you know, later years of his life under house arrest for it. But I mean, this is a guy that was unwavering. Once again, was very passionate and unwavering in his commitment to, you know, finding out the mysteries of the universe.
You
hit, you know, the nail on the head. You have to have that type of presence.
That's it. It makes perfect sense to me that if a guy discovers something about the universe way, way back then, there was no counsel of anything that was going to make this guy undiscover what he discovered or deny what he knew to be true. I think that's a marvelous example. Well, then when words here, you know better than we, but when I throw out words like entropy and quantum mechanics, some people are just going to be straight up intimidated. They're going to go, uh-oh, I better check the Yankee score. Uh-oh, I better go water the plants. The dog needs a walk. You know, they bail. Other people say, wow, this sounds interesting. I don't know what the hell they're talking about. So my question to you is, how important is it to make the language of science accessible? We don't have to water words down. We don't have to change it. We've got to make it accessible. Got to get it out there. And quantum mechanics and entropy bring this to mind. Talk to me about the language of science and how important that is to get people interested.
No, you make a great point. I mean, once again, going back to, you know, the training that a typical science, you know, person has, I mean, we use language, we use a vocabulary that's, you know, it's for our colleagues, you know, and they know what we're talking about. It's almost like a foreign language in some ways. And that's the problem, is we don't take that supposed science foreign language and present it to a general audience. And like you say, we don't have to dumb it down. You know, I think we've all read those books where it's dumbed down, and then you start feeling like, well, this is kind of silly. We just need to change the vocabulary. We just need to change the language in a way that's very accessible. These ideas, you know, are they a little bit difficult and confusing at first? Sure. I mean, what isn't? That's not unique to science. I think the problem that we're having in science and communicating science is we're just not finding that common language that's accessible to non-scientists. And we really need to work on that.
Absolutely, that's one of those great areas. I think you'll agree, Doctor. Disruption would help. If we would disrupt some of this staid environment, we could cut through and get these kids hooked on the real drama of science, where sometimes this other stuff obscures just how impressive the story of science is. Let me get to one. I'm so glad that this is an area that you and I can talk about, because it's in the news every day, all the time, everywhere you look. Google just went through it. Not enough girls in that science class, Ed. I want more girl scientists. I want more girls in this area that's been dominated by men. And we say today, absolutely, we've been missing out on all these women in science, or pick your profession, that's been lopsided in the past. What are your thoughts on this? What could be done, in your opinion, right away, that we could hook more women and get them riveted to scientific discovery and pursuit?
Yeah, no, so I'm glad that you asked me about that. I mean, I have two daughters of my own, and I think about this, you know, it's a topic very close to my heart. I mean, I think that there's some key things that we need to do. I think we need to expose young girls to science early on. You know, I think that what happens, and it's really unfortunate, that a lot of studies show that even today, and this may be surprising to you, is that there's a lot of these stereotypes that are so propagating that really kind of say, well, you know, science in general, that's for someone that has raw talent, or that's someone that's just really smart. These are the people that go into science. And unfortunately, also in that message is that this is more inherent to boys. You know, and of course that's not true, but this message still propagates. And I think that one way to get past this and to help young girls get kind of inoculated, if you will, or vaccinated against this, is to expose them early on to science. you know, there's a lot of things you can do with young kids. Of course, there's the science games and take them to a science museum, but there's day-to-day activities. You know, I don't know, my toddler, who's coming up on 3 years old, I mean, she's infinitely curious, you know, and you can take those day-to-day opportunities, those curious moments, and kind of walk them through some things, and you can really bust out a science moment with your child. And I think that it's really about early on, you know, doing this early on, you know, make them feel very empowered at a young age, so that when they go out into the world and they're exposed to this type of stuff, this more negative, you know, ridiculous stereotyping, it doesn't bother them.
Exactly, know? Right. It won't be as sticky with them, right? It won't make sense to them when they bump into it later. I think I want to underscore what you said just a bit here, because exposure is the key. Science is compelling and mysterious and awesome and beautiful and cool all on its own. I don't know that we need to push the science near the girls. I think it needs to just pop up near them, and they will have their natural attraction, bing, bang, boom, just like anybody else did the first time you saw a Bunsen burner. You know, the first time you watched a movie, I mean, I remember the old horror movies. There was always a mad scientist. He always had the glass bubbles and the steam coming up. And I mean, it was always something that was a compelling image. I think all we have to do is put it there.
Exactly.
Absolutely. If you're just joining us, we're talking about making science more interesting for students. Our guest is Dr. Scott Bembenek. What do students say to you about science that, like, hurts your ears, or you want to correct, or you're kind of startled by the distance in their take on it? You know, when they refer to it, they're like, "What? Science?"
Right.
And you're like, "What do you mean? Did you light the stove this morning? Did you turn on the microwave? Did you brush your teeth? All of the science. You got science all over the place." What do you hear from students that you would like to change?
Well, you know, it's funny. So for years, and I still get this every now and then, when I would meet people and you know, of course you have the conversation about what you would do, and I would tell them, and they'd be, "Oh, you know, chemistry, yes, yeah, well, I didn't like that class in school." And I was amazed at, number one, someone, it was almost like this, you know, this gut response. They couldn't help themselves. They couldn't stop themselves from saying this, right? Because usually you don't say these things to someone you just met.
Right.
You know, "Oh, I don't like what you do," or "I don't," you know, it's like, "Oh, okay." And I was, you know, always surprised by that. And then I still think there's a lot of this, you know, people hear about science and it kind of cringe a little bit. And I think people are more open to it. But once again, the exposure, their initial exposure is just rather poor, you know, when they take that first class. And I hear it over and over, and people talk about it. And a lot of it, I think, is because it's, once again, it's these bare-boned, raw facts that are kind of thrown at them. People can't see how they're important. They can't see how they even go together within themselves. You know, and then worse, maybe they're even forced to memorize it. And
people are like, "There, wow, you go. Then we're done.
Terrible.
Then we're finished." That that loses its last amount of value is gone once we go to repetition recitation. One of the worst. I want to bring this up because I think you've got two great points of view here that we can benefit from. You yourself have achieved a PhD, and you work in an area where, you know, we want to stimulate more interest. So that's what's going into this next question. I have always believed in this holistic approach to education, that science does go with history, does go with biography, does go with the subjects are all interconnected and should be seen as a holistic education experience and not compartmentalized.
Right.
How important is that in getting kids turned on to science?
Well, I think it's ultimately important, because I think that, you know, the problem is that I think people, once they've had these other experiences, they tell themselves, "Oh, it's okay. I'm not going to be a scientist. So I don't need science," right? I mean, how often do we hear this? But that's really sad, because even if you're not going to be a scientist, the things that you learn in your science class, good science class, and this process of, you know, discovery and being inquisitive, and the tools that you build on solving these problems, it's very empowering, and it's stuff that you can use in other areas. You don't have to be a scientist to benefit from learning science and science techniques. You know, it's kind of like, these are kind of like life tools, in my opinion. You know, learning to inquire about something, learning to ask questions and interrogate the problem in a meaningful way. You're building problem-solving skills that enable you to be a critical thinker. I just can't imagine anything more important than that.
Well, this is where I think the hook is, right? I think you've got a great hook in that we currently live in a society that loves to dissemble, take things apart, and just use the exact amount that we want to use. And that lends itself to understanding structure and science. You know, I'm having a ball. I can't tell you how much I enjoy getting people excited about education in general, but I'm so grateful to you, Dr. Bembenek, because you've tackled the one that I think offers us the most exciting promise at problem solving. Science has been neglected, and we got the spotlight back on it. Thank you so much for doing that with the book.
Yeah, thank you, Ed. I appreciate this.
Well, I look forward to having you back on the show. Will you come back and do more science with us, and we can keep...
Oh, anytime.
We can keep polishing.
Talk about science forever.
Yeah, let's just polish... Exactly. Let's just polish this thing and make it so irresistible. They're all signing up for it all over the place. Dr. Scott Bembenek, our guest on the Ed Till Show, Starcom Radio Network. The book is called The Cosmic Machine, The Science That Runs Our Universe and the Story Behind It. Dr. Scott Bembenek has made several substantial contributions to the areas of statistical mechanics, kinetic theory, glass theory, liquid dynamics, as I mentioned this earlier, computational drug discovery. These are awesome. His work is in scientific journals, but we really have to get kids turned on and want to learn this stuff with the passion and joy that it really deserves. All right, if you want more information about our guest, go to www.scottbembenek.com. That's S-C-O-T-T for Scott. And then Bembenek is B-E-M-B-E-N-E-K. So that's scottbembenek.com. And, of course, the book available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and other select bookstores. Remember the title, The Cosmic Machine, The Science That Runs Our Universe and the Story Behind It.
Ed Till Show.